autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea. With a rollicking song, he sweeps along, swaggering boisterously. His face is weather-beaten. He wears a hooded sash, with a silver hat about his head, and a bristling black mustache. He growls as he storms the country, a villain big and bold. And the trees all shake and quiver and quake as he robs them of their gold. The autumn wind is a raider, pillaging just for fun. He'll knock you round and upside down and laugh when he's conquered and won.
That deluxe walk-up music can mean only one thing. Our deluxe baseball guest, Mark Gonzalez. Hey, Gonzo.
I'm still getting over the Chip Diller reference. If there's a Chip Diller in this cast of characters, who is Kent Dorfman?
Yeah, well, I would say the chairman. There's a physical resemblance to Kent Dorfman. Oh, boy! Yes. And, you know, and had the car cut up and like that. So Flounder, yeah, I guess he was. Oh. Chip.
Or we could segue to Hogan's Heroes. Who's Sergeant Schultz?
I know nothing. Well, that's pretty much the whole organization. They know nothing. Well, you know, as long as we're talking about it, when you watch this, and I know you have such an interest in college sports, and you know the lengths that agents, college agents, pro football teams, college football teams go to keep tabs on guys. What's the extent comparatively that baseball teams do? Because the White Sox sure look like they could have used a host of private investigators. Compare and contrast, Gonzo.
There's a comparison that people probably aren't going to like when I mention the person's name, but I was at an obscure college game about 15 years ago, and in the crowd was a member or an employee of the Boris Corporation. And so next time I saw Scott, I said, hey, he really covered this thing thoroughly. I saw one of your cohorts at a baseball game. I didn't think I'd see anybody there. And he just said, well, that's their job. I would hope that, you know, we scout better than the big league teams. And I think in the case of vetting and background checks, you want an organization that's going to take the extra step and go deeper than MLB security. And I strongly feel that way because, you know, talent's talent. We all can recognize who can do what, who has shortcomings. But if you have somebody with a flaw, I mean, to me, that's why you have red flags and you tend to stay away from people. Now, you're going to take risks that time. Everybody might have some kind of risk depending on what kind of degree you vision. But bottom line is you got to go beyond the call of duty, especially now with social media and all that. What's out there behooves you to have top security. And one more thing, I wouldn't have named who they rely on to vet prospective acquisitions because, you know, what's a visiting player supposed to do? Tip the clubhouse guy more in order to stand in good favor? I mean, come on. Anyway,
what do you mean you would have named what? Who?
No, I wouldn't have named they. You know, Rick Hahn went on the name. You know, we talked to former players and all that, and clubhouse guys. I mean, the clubhouse guys are under enough scrutiny and have to attend to 50 members of traveling parties. I wouldn't have mentioned any of those guys, especially the clubhouse guys who already have one of the toughest jobs in baseball.
And look like spies, right? Oh, because
they're built into these.
Yeah.
Exactly. And front offices have enough spies in clubhouses these days.
He's Mark Gonzalez, the deluxe baseball guest. He is joining me on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Gonzo is anywhere from Associated Press to the Sun Times, Baseball America. And baseball itself, Gonzo, has some new rules coming up. You'll see them in the spring training games, which will, for me anyways, would make spring training much more interesting. So the pitch clock. What's going to happen and what are your thoughts on it?
Oh, boy, I think this is going to be a bigger issue initially than people think. I watched 5 college games yesterday, and 3 of them, there was a big issue with guys taking more time, whether to deliver the pitch or I want more time at the plate. And so I think, especially for the batters that have routines, that step out, fix their gloves, they're going to have a little issue with this, and it behooves them to adjust right away, as well as the pitchers who, you know, get the ball, throw it, step off the mound, circle around the mound. Their thought process is going to have to be accelerated quite a bit.
Joey Votto was saying, I don't care. You give me 10 seconds, I'll be there. You give me a minute, I can do that in a minute, too. Whatever you got, I'll be there. I'll be ready to hit. I don't need all the time. Is what one of the best hitters in the game is saying. So he's adjusted already. And we always hear players complaining about every new rule, and then they eventually adjust as long as it's enforced. And what you were talking about in the college game, it did not seem to be consistently enforced. Did I read that right? Did I hear you right?
No, it was enforced. It's just that players were taken aback initially, like, wow, you're calling that a ball because I didn't throw enough time, or you know, I didn't get in the box quick enough, so it's a strike, that sort of thing, where it was enforced. And I think it's, you know, if these college players are having some issues with it, then I think who's to say the big league players who are more established and have routines can adjust quicker. It's going to be a fascinating issue in spring training, and a tough one for the umpires who already have enough on the plate.
So the minor leaguers who have played under this pitch clock was tested in the minors, and the minor leaguers who are now up in major league camp have been quoted in various camps as saying they were stunned by it. They were blaming failures on the clock. I can't do this. It's all the clock's fault. And eventually by the end of the year, they got used to it and games were cut by a half an hour, which is significant. So we're going to give players we know they're going to bitch about it, and then we know they're going to adjust, right? Isn't that the history of most of these rules, except for the balk?
Yeah,
because nobody understands the balk.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. That eventually they'll adjust, and they have to. And I think that you know, the clock will help dictate this, and hopefully accelerate the adjustment period.
So the lack of shift, the borders you cannot cross, the iron curtains of where the infielders can and cannot stand. What do you think of that, and how is that going to change, help, or not have much to do with the game?
Kind of torn on that one. I always appreciated when a guy like Anthony Rizzo would beat the shift, especially against the Pirates, who were like one of the first shift heavy team. No, I appreciate what he used to do. He, you know, they'd send, you know, half the team or more, like 75% of the team to the right side, and Anthony would poke the ball to the left center in the gap and just foil the strategy. And you kind of an art that's might be lost a little bit. But, you know, at the same time, a lot of left-handed hitters were getting robbed by the shift. So as far as defensing it, I think you're going to see more athleticism, which the Cubs think they've addressed, and I think it can't hurt them from a defensive standpoint. But it's kind of be neat to see these dead red left-handed pull hitters get back to doing what they're known to do. So just kind of curious to see how that's policed, but I think there's only so much defenses can do. And the other thing too is that the offense can appeal if they think a team is moving too quickly to another side.
They can appeal. They can stop the game and say, "Wait, measure him. We want to bring out the chains. We want." Is it going to be marked on the field? You can't go. Don't go past here. No. Or is it going to be like an invisible fence around that you can keep your dog in your yard?
Yeah, they can challenge on replay and all that. It'd be fascinating to see how they measure it, if there's some kind of laser device they use. But I'm curious to see how many teams actually say, hey, we got an issue here. Let's look at it.
Wow, they're trying to make the game more appealing to fans, and they're giving more replays. There's more options for replays, which fans will just go, no, we didn't come here for this. I don't want to see this. Perfect. That's so MLB. So the infield restrictions place an emphasis, as you said, on athleticism. My guest here is Mark Gonzalez. He is my deluxe baseball guest here on The Score. And as you mentioned, the Cubs and Cubs spring training talk on The Score is sponsored by Sloan, official water efficiency partner of the Chicago Cubs. Swanson and Horner, a shortstop, moving to second base, placing an emphasis on athleticism and defense in general is where the Cubs are headed. So this seems to be the way to combat it. The Cubs seem to be the most over-the-top team about addressing, placing an emphasis on defense at whatever the cost of offense may or may not be. This is the way they're headed. We're going to combat these kind of restrictions by just getting either the fastest guys or the most athletic guys, all the Ozzie Smith wannabes we can find. Is that how this goes?
It's a fascinating concept because they believe they did really improve their defense, but there are two, you know, asterisks next to that. Can the pitchers induce contact on the ground so these guys have a better chance of getting to the balls? Because if they don't do their thing, this thing goes down the tube because, you know, it's putting a lot of pressure on the pitchers, starting pitchers especially, just making sure they induce, whether it be soft contact or contact on the ground, where these guys have a better chance of getting the ball. And the other thing, too, is they said they were going to address power. And we all know that power in the first 2 months at Wrigley Field is almost non-existent because of the weather conditions. Now, they have some guys with a history of some power, but they're coming off subpar years, too. So keep that in mind, whether, you know, Bellinger can get back to close to a semblance of his MVP year, or, you know, Mancini, if he can get back to what he was doing in Baltimore a few years back, those sort of things. And Suzuki, too, who I think is the key to the offense this year, you know, a second year in the States now, how he adjusts. Those are big factors because, you know, other than defense, a pitcher's best friend is a lead. And they didn't really distance themselves in a lot of games. They played a lot of tight games because a large part because they didn't give the pitchers a margin for error in terms of ample run support.
They also didn't have swing and miss pitchers.
True. And that goes back to, you know, my theory on how the pitchers got as good as they were at times last year, got to do a better job of inducing soft contact or getting hit on the ground.
So how do you think this affects a White Sox team that didn't care much about defense anyways and doesn't care much about base running? The Cubs weren't the Cubs knew how to run the bases, but the White Sox don't. And if you're going to be, if this is going to open up the game in some ways, you need to be a smarter base running team and more aggressive. You need to have probably take a different approach. How will that affect a team that doesn't care about catching the ball and doesn't care about keeping their heads up on the bases?
Well, I didn't think the Cubs were the greatest base running team either. And David Ross pointed that out. At the end of the year, that they weren't, you know, they were more close to the Jack Clark school of base running. But I think the White Sox were in agreement on that. It was just embarrassing and appalling. It was like, you know, they had 3.5 weeks of spring training. It looked like they had maybe a few days based on the way they failed to execute precise, astute base running. It just wasn't there. And I just think that's going to be one area that has to get better just because it has to. I don't think it can get much worse than it was last year. But, you know, once again, it's going to be a big key for them because I think with all these guys coming off bad years, you can't expect all of them to rebound. It just doesn't happen. A few guys, yeah, it could happen, but can't expect it. It's just like injuries. You can start have the best starting eight out there, but can you expect them to play 140 games? It just doesn't happen with all eight spots. You're going to have injuries, and that's where depth comes in. So they're going to have a lot of things go right for them to compete.
What is it? My guest is Mark Gonzalez, my deluxe baseball guest here. You can read him in the Sun-Times, Associated Press, Baseball America. He's all things baseball. That's what makes him a deluxe baseball guest. What is it, and you've seen other situations like this, maybe there's a comparison. When you have an outfield, you're the White Sox, you have an outfielder like Eloy Jimenez. He can't play the outfield. It was almost as bad as like when Frank Thomas couldn't play first. You didn't want him to play first. And for a while, he balked at it. And Eloy is balking at it. And Eloy's acting like they're not going to talk to him. Don't you dare talk to me. I'm going to have my glove. I'm going to go play. In fact, I'm going to play right field. If you and I'm thinking, if boy, we thought he was bad in left. Imagine what's going to happen in right. And all he does is get hurt. How do you deal with this other than the Ozzie Guillen way? And Ozzie said it on this radio station. You're not playing the outfield. Now, you go learn how to be a DH. And there are certain guys it takes a while to do that. But what's the model for this? What's the blueprint for this? And the White Sox talk about communication, and they don't seem to be communicating with a guy who's a liability, a self-inflicted liability.
Well, I think they are communicating with him. It's just that it hasn't checked in his head. And I'm glad you mentioned Ozzie Guillen, because I remember in 2007, you know, they thought about using Jim Thome, who was the DH, using that first. But, you know, you put him out there one or two times and he was sore, and then he couldn't even DH. And your body gets in a rhythm, routine, of where you're going to play all the time. And I remember Ozzie talking about this, and he was spot on that, you know, you can't – sometimes you can't expect a guy to go out there and play a position for more than two games because of the soreness. Your body gets in a routine where – you know, you're used to playing one position all the time with few exceptions. And I think in the case of Eloy and his leg history, it'd behoove him just to be the DH and maybe play one game at most a week in the field, because, you know, we've seen he's been injury prone. And if he can make 140 starts at DH, I think you're on to something there where he can put up some impressive numbers.
I think you have to understand being a team player, because this sounds like a me first kind of guy, and there's always a stripe of being that kind of me first kind of guy. Could be interpreted that way as being selfish. It's also a guy who's being confident, and you want your players confident. I don't know how self awareness gets shaped into this, but I don't think the White Sox do themselves any good by letting this dangle.
Yeah, I just think some of it too may be the fact that he hates being labeled as a offense only guy at such a young age, and I think he wants to dismiss that. But I mean, the evidence is there that he's been challenged when he's played the outfield.
Yeah, well, you can get labeled as a patient too, and it's probably better to be a one way player than to be on a gurney somewhere pre-op or post-op. So anyways, before I let you go, Gonzo, I wondered who this guy would be, if anybody. Who would be the Steve Traxel of the pitch clock era? The guy who absolutely can't adjust. Is there anybody named that jumps out?
Oh, not at this time, but boy, in the day you had guys that really labored out. On the flip side, Joe McEwing, when he was at the plate and played for the Cardinals and Mets, he used to take forever because he'd always be playing with his batting glove, stepping out, stepping back in and all that. You know, Nomar Garciaparra was another. But on the mound, boy, it's tough to beat Traxel.
And I wonder if John Lester could adapt to this. Lester's a guy, he took his time. Lester was a guy who took his time, especially holding runners on. You maybe it felt like more than 20 seconds. I never actually timed him, but a guy who couldn't throw to first, could Lester? Lester's a pro. He's a Hall of Famer. He was a terrific number one. He was exactly who you wanted to follow, and yet he seemed to, and maybe because he didn't face these restrictions, we never saw how adaptable he was. But what do you think? You watched him.
I think he would have figured it out because – you know, remember that first game against the Cardinals where they ran wild on him in 2015, and then all of a sudden, with the help of Wilson, they figured it out pretty well. And I think they did. They took a lot of big steps toward, you know, addressing the opponent's running game, and I think he would be adaptable to this. I really do think so.
Okay, so running game, and you bring up Wilson Contreras, now in St. Louis, and the umpire, the robot umps come in next year. How big a mistake is this? Will the running game, will base stealing step up, and then his arm absent from the Cubs become even more acute? Or how does that play out, his absence play out for the Cubs?
Oh, I worry about it quite a bit from the from the offensive side. I really do, because right now, I mean, between what they got back, they have guys that call a really good game, throw okay, but the offense equivalent would be Fran Healy. It's really, really, really going to be tough.
Sad.
But I just think Wilson, especially if the robot umps come in, with his ability to stop a running game, really will stand out for the Cardinals.
Gonzo, thanks. Thanks for being for another deluxe performance. Appreciate
thanks
it.
Thanks for remembering me.
Mark Gonzalez. Sometimes a Associated Press, Baseball America, right here on the Score. Baseball lost a legendary character, really, an announcer who was at once the best and then became Captain Obvious. And there are moments to discuss with the passing of Tim McCarver. And we will do that here on Saturday Suckage. I'm Stevie Suckage. And Sean, has our audience checked in on the web poll?
They have. Right now, I believe, last time I checked.
Okay, yeah. First of all, let's reset the web poll for people joining us. My rapper name is Chance the Rabbi, but should I change it to Dr. Dreidel?
And Dr. Dreidel is winning 57% right now.
So is that like 3-2?
We actually got 144 votes. We got more votes on this than we did last week.
See? Yeah, they're into the Dr. Dreidel thing. Okay.
Oh, well,
there you go. So where do they go, Sean?
61.39 now.
Where do they go?
670thescore.com or at 670thescore Twitter, at 670.
At 670thescore Twitter on the Twitter machine. And then you can vote for Chance the Rabbi or Dr. Dreidel. Okay. Stevie Suckage coming back, and we've got some sound and stories and stuff to go on. Tim McCarver. Tim McCarver wasn't always the Captain Obvious. Had a talk with Al Michaels about him, and it became what announcers, what analysts should have been. So we'll share all that, and there'll be other nonsense. Saturday Suckage, of course. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
This guy sucks.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Welcome in, welcome back. Stevie Suckage here on Saturday Suckage. What were the odds of that? Be here till 2 o'clock. We still to come. We will talk to James Boyd of The Athletic. We will talk. He covers the Colts for The Athletic. We'll talk Bears, Colts, trade talk. What do you believe? Which is pretty much nothing. What do you need to happen? Well, we need to talk about it. That's why. And how much the Colts need a quarterback. What do the Bears think about the quarterback they have and stuff like that. And Jim Irsay, the owner. What is he really saying? Do you need a decoder ring or no? Is it that obvious? So we'll do that. Cultural zeitgeist. It's a big week for Rebels. Got some news from the Wake and Bake Club. Pot sales during the Super Bowl, because you can't just have TV ratings, right? You got to have pot ratings. You got to have pot numbers. And we'll do that. And it was a commercial that aired during the Super Bowl that we should have seen. We didn't. I'll tell you about that. But for now, I want to call your attention to the Score's Twitter, the Twitter account at 670 The Score. We have a web poll running for our audience, and our audience can vote. Do I keep my rap name, Chance the Rabbi, or change it to Dr. Dreidel? Sean, where are we on this?
So you've got 62% that are saying you should be Dr. Dreidel.
Ooh, wow. Purim's coming up.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, okay. All right, we'll do that. This week, Tim McCarver passed away. He was, as this microphone falls, he was mocked horribly at the end of his broadcast career. And he had a long broadcast career, Cardinals, Mets, Yankees, nationally. From Al Michaels to Joe Buck, he was always in your ear on baseball, and he was eventually going to wear the name on his back of his jersey of Captain Obvious. Tim McCarver was a smart guy. He was a funny guy. Tim McCarver could once said about Steve Carlton, he goes, "Wow, he's really a lucky pitcher. He manages to face hitters when they're having their worst day." He was just mocking this whole idea. So Tim McCarver had a really good sense of humor, and he was a sharp guy. And you go back to he and Al Michaels, and you could see a change in the way, and this would affect maybe every baseball broadcast going forward. And I talked to Al Michaels about it one time, and I said, "There's something changed there." And Al said, in leading Tim McCarver to become more about, more analytical, to more descriptive, to put you in uniform or in the game or in the position, Al Michaels did more than just call balls and strikes. He would stay. He would be, in a sense, Captain Obvious. He would give you the stuff that you're used to hearing from analysts, so that the analyst, in this case, Tim McCarver, could go deeper, could give you a greater explanation, a different explanation, teach you something. And I think it affected every baseball broadcast going forward. And McCarver was terrific to listen to with Al Michaels. You had one, you know, the sportscaster of a generation there, voice of a generation, Al Michaels. And he's smart enough to know this broadcast can go further, this analyst can go further. And that's what happened with Tim McCarver. And he was then became known as Captain Obvious. What was indisputable and had a quite the Steve Stoneness about him when you listen to an analyst and you want to learn something or have insight to the game, something you didn't think about, something to help you appreciate it. There's no greater show than the World Series. There's no bigger show than that. There is no greater time than when the Yankees are in it, because the Yankees are just bigger than life. And there's nothing more important than Mariano being on the mound. And here it was, 2001, Mariano Rivera against the Diamondbacks, Game 7. And McCarver is doing what every analyst probably can only dream of doing.
The one problem is Rivera throws inside the left-handers, and left-handers get a lot of broken bad hits in the shallow outfield, the shallow part of the outfield. That's the danger in bringing the infield in with a guy like Rivera on the mound.
Floater, center field, the Diamondbacks World Champions.
Tim McCarver called it. Rivera, Luis Gonzalez, a left-handed hitter, off the fist, dunking into center field, into left field, something that had Jeter played at normal depth, probably could have caught. And that is one of the all-time great calls. That's what an analyst should be and should do. And you hear it. We get spoiled here, frankly, with Steve Stone. He's just wonderful. He's spectacular in telling you what this is, how it could, this is how it should, this is what you're going to see, this is what you should see. And there's McCarver doing it on the most prominent stage baseball has, at the most prominent moment against its greatest with its greatest franchise, participating in the greatest reliever of all time. I mean, that's just... The confluence of all those things, that's terrific. Tim McCarver was being Tim McCarver there. So I wanted to, this is also part of McCarver's passing. This comes from Cubs legend Daniel Descalso. He also played for the Cardinals. But Cubs legend Daniel Descalso, upon the passing of Tim McCarver, tweeted out this story. This McCarver did Cardinals games, of course. Tim McCarver mispronounced my last name a couple times and I told him my grandmother wasn't happy with him. He asked for her number, called her to apologize, and had a nice conversation with her. She got a kick out of it, and he always asked me about her after that. R.I.P. Tim. That's Daniel Descalso talking about Tim McCarver calling his grandmother to apologize for mispronouncing her grandson's name.
That's so cool.
Yep. I love that. I love that story. So that's that. We have more stuff coming up. Why don't we get an update, Sean, on our rap name web poll at 670 The Score on our Twitter page. Do I keep Chance the Rabbi? Do I change to Dr. Dreidel? What does our audience say?
So we're at 161 votes right now. You're at 62% are saying Dr. Dreidel, 38% are saying Chance the Rabbi. Okay. This is, I thought this would be a little bit closer, man, because I like Chance the Rabbi, but Dr. Dreidel is winning a lot of people over.
Yeah, well, you know, in advance of Purim, when you know Purim's coming, that's good. So, you know what, I can't get enough of just the kind of the clown, how do I say this? The complete lack of awareness of the most expensive player the Bulls have ever had. We're going to do that after this. I'm sorry, but this is Saturday Suckage after all. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I think Donkey Kong is the best game ever.
Donkey Kong sucks.
You know something? You suck.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
We got to stop beating ourselves. And it's it's a recurring theme. I think 1 through 15, you know, the guys are obviously tired of losing and the miscues, especially in games that we're leading. So find a way to, hold on to it and then just continue to compete. You don't expect it. You know, we got to find some way, somehow. Obviously, we're a game or two out of, the plane right now and, just try to go game by game and see where we go from there.
And Zach LaVine, $215 million man. For the Bulls, saying guys are tired of losing. Well, apparently not. And they're not tired of finding new ways to lose. You can lose at the trading deadline. First game after the trading deadline, when everybody just exhales and go, oh, thank God, I didn't get moved. Well, so I can play like crap now. And so there you see mental and emotional strength of Kleenex of this team. And then the last game of this six-game stretch, the Bulls would lose all of them in the process, blowing a 20-point lead in one of the games. Again, wouldn't be the first time they did that. The Bulls just decided, well, we don't need to play. This is going to be an all-star break. We don't need to play. We're going away. So let me just hit the button here. I mean, this team is just the tensile strength of Kleenex. So I hit the sim lottery button, and Indiana has a first pick. The Bulls would end up in the eighth spot, which would go to Orlando. Let me hit the sim lottery button at Tankathon again. Yeah, that's even worse. That's ninth. But if the Bulls finish in the top four, it's top four protected, the trade for Vooch. The pick for Nikola Vucevic. But that was Zach LaVine we heard. Go back to December 18th for a moment, will you? Can we travel back in time? Until we band together and start helping each other, you're not going to see a different result. The result that night was the Minnesota Timberwolves scored 150 points December 18th against Zach LaVine's Bulls. You can't ask your team for effort every night. Why? You can. You should have effort. That's the first thing we have to bring. But you don't. You weren't bringing it at first, and you're not bringing it at the end. That's why you're choking away so many leads, Zach. It's just inconsistent. Guys in here are talking. We're trying to be leaders. How would Zach LaVine know anything about leadership? How would he know anything about leadership? You paid the most money and you seem the most lost. You don't know how to play defense. What exactly, and here was a key question asked by Cody Westerlund after they lost their sixth straight game. To a Bucks team that lost Giannis for most of the game, didn't have Middleton or Portis at all. Here's Zach LaVine, alleged leader.
I mean, something isn't working, obviously. It's, you know, some games were really good, some days were bad, and it's that, that's once again the consistency factor of, you know, figuring out what our identity is and what we're going to each and every game. Even if guys are in and out of the lineup, you see some teams that have consistency with what they do. They have an identity. I think that's something that we, you know, we're still trying to figure out in these last couple of years. Obviously, we changed our offense a little bit last year, or this year from last year, but it's no excuse with the type of talent that we have on the team.
Your identity is Lonzo Ball's post-surgical gown with his backside showing. That's your identity, Zach. Your identity actually is Zach LaVine. I said this before. I will reiterate this. Your identity is Zach LaVine. You're just going to try to shoot. You're not going to play defense. You're not going to make guys around you better. That's your Bulls identity, Zach LaVine. And that's why, since Lonzo Ball got hurt, this is a sub-500 team. A sub-500 team, considerably bad, considerably weak mentally and emotionally, but Arturis Karnišević needs more time to figure it out. We're just going to evaluate these players. We don't know. It'll show us the last 26, 28, 20 games, right? Which is why Karnišević is Lithuanian for Garpax. 312-644-6767 is the number. Wow, talk about a blast over in the past, though. Let me take you back. Stan in Bellwood. Stan in Bellwood calling the score?
How about that?
Hey,
how
you!
How about that?
All I had to
how
do
you
was
been,
bring
man?
Up...
Long time just, no talk.
I just brought up Tim McCarver, and that got you on the horn, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. He's another Captain Obvious. That's something we share. We both have in common. I had to give you a call. Hey, seriously, though, Rosie, I was in the car. I've been listening to you, you know, for the last hour and a half, and your car... Yeah, I hate to take you away from your... interrupt your train of thought here, you know, with the Bulls. But your conversation with Mark Gonzalez resonated with me, and I couldn't wait to get home to call to discuss the state of the White Sox with you. I hope you don't mind.
No, I'm here for it.
All right, good. Because I, you know, first of all, I'm stunned that Eloy doesn't understand that he doesn't belong in the outfield or that he's not going to be playing left field. You would think that, you know, the lights should have gone on when they signed Benintendi. So, I mean, the White Sox should have sold Eloy's glove on eBay during the winter. And he should be permanently anchored to the bench. You know, I've been arguing with Matt Spiegel on this, you know, for the last couple of years. You know, Eloy is not just a bad outfielder. He's a clod. He exercises poor judgment. And more importantly, you know, he's a menace to other guys out there, too. I mean, we have enough trouble keeping T.A. Yeah. and Luis Robert upright as it is. We can't have Eloy out there playing, complicating the situation any more than that. So he needs to take a seat and keep quiet and keep swinging that bat. But the bigger picture here, for me, is that I am truly disgusted and baffled at the lack of urgency on the White Sox's part and their approach toward the team this year. They haven't even fixed or addressed the problems that they went into last year with. Mm-hmm. They don't have a defensive caddy for Grandal. They don't have a second baseman. They don't have protection. You know, I'm all for giving Oscar Colas a shot, but if he doesn't pan out, they have no protection there. Clevinger, you know, if he does pitch for the White Sox this year, even if he's good, it's not an upgrade to the rotation because essentially all he is a replacement for Johnny Cueto, who's gone. I do like the Benintendi signing. I understand that they have to get both Eloy and Vaughn out of the outfield. That's good. But that means Abreu is gone. You can't hang your hat on him. He's a move-the-needle guy. Benintendi isn't. So I put my money where my mouth is. The total, and I know you like to talk about Vegas and the betting activity. The number on the White Sox is 83. I don't see them as any better than they were last year. I've already bet the under. I have no expectations or confidence that they're going to surpass that or be any better than they were last year, like I said. And what's worse, you know, after this off-season activity, seeing what all these teams did, all of the players that have changed teams, all of the money that was spent, I really don't see the White Sox as any better than me. You know, I've evaluated the teams and crunched the numbers, and after seeing who's gone where, I think that they're no better than the eighth or ninth best team in the American League. There are three teams in the West that I see is clearly better than the White Sox. I love what the Texas Rangers did. They upgraded its manager and improved themselves at two or three different positions, brought in DeGrom. There's certainly one team in the Central that's clearly better, and more than likely two. And four teams in the American League East that's better. And I include the Orioles, because the Orioles last year, head-to-head against the White Sox, matched them at every opportunity and proved that they were a better team and on the come up. I don't see it with the White Sox at all this year, and there's just no room for hope or confidence. As I said to start the conversation, what really baffles me is their approach. You know, Rick Hahn evidently thinks that the Benintendi signing was enough, and they're improved. And they didn't even address the problems that they went into last year with. I don't get it. They've fallen in love with this team, and the White Sox are a mediocre team in a weak division. I don't get their thinking, and I just had to vent. You know, tell me why I'm wrong.
I hope you feel better. Do you feel better, Stan? I want you to feel
better. Well, I'm getting it all off my chest. Yeah, I do feel better. I wanted to say hello to you because I haven't talked to you in so long.
It's been great. You're welcome anytime. You can do radiotherapy here. I'm here for you, Stan. Thanks.
Well, I will.
Thank you. All right. It's Stan from Bellwood, and Score legend. Score caller legend. And he's right. They haven't caught up with last year's problems, and they come into this year with the same problems, only it's even worse. It's not the manager. It's a man of despicable allegations. So we'll take a break. And when we come back on Saturday Suckage, we'll see if we can work a trade with the Colts for the Bears. I don't know if we'll trade our quarterback or if we'll trade our pick, but we'll see if we can work a trade. Stevie Suckage here on Saturday Suckage. Ah. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.